The Fleischman Feast Hour, presenting a variety entertainment directed by Rudy Valley.
This is Rudy Valley and Company. During the next 59 minutes, we shall offer, subject to your approval, a radio music hall review with a cast which includes... We're glad to know that she's going to do another Barry play for us tonight. That, however, comes later. Right now, a special curtain and a special welcome for Miss Helen Hayes.
Ladies and gentlemen, since I was last here, I've met a good many people, actors and actresses, who appeared on this program, and they all seem to agree on one thing, that Mr. Valley has a very charming way of saying nice things about his guests without seeming to be trying to say them. Unlike most professional introducers, he seems to mean what he says. So I'd like to turn this very special introduction right back in his direction. I give you our host. Long may he introduce.
Besides Miss Hayes, we have with us this evening Joe Penner, this program's candidate for the next radio comedy hit. Pops and Louie, novelty singers. And Harold Van Dusen, Radio City Music Hall, vocal star.
Shall they be sweet wishes? 1, 2, and 3. Since I have learned to love you, 1 has now come true. Won't you learn to love me? Then we'll have 2, 3 wishes. None of them new, just wishes only for you. When someday you're wearing my ring, 3 wishes will come will come true.
Lieutenant, we have a weakness for Joe. Twice he has been in this program, and twice he has had what might be called a howling success. Last time, you may remember, he nearly ruined the orchestra. This time, the boys have instructions not to try to laugh and play at the same time. There are no restrictions, however, on the audience. Joe Penner with Tony Hughes.
Hello, Tony.
Well, Joe, am I glad to see you.
Yeah?
Yes, sir, boy, I said it. Why, Joe, wait a minute. What a lovely medal. Where'd you get it?
Well, I got that in school when I graduated.
Is that so, Joe? For what?
Well, I was for giving the best answer to a problem.
Yes, and what was the problem?
Well, the teacher asked how many legs had an ostrich, and I said three.
Oh, but, Joe, that's all wrong. An ostrich has only two legs.
I know, but everybody else in the class said four, and I was the nearest. That's why I got the medal.
Oh, Joe, you haven't changed a bit. But I'm sure tickled to death to see you.
Yeah?
Yes, positively. Well, I've been driving all over town in my car, hoping I'd run across you.
Boy, ain't I lucky.
Boy, we're both lucky.
Yeah.
You know, today is my wedding anniversary, Joe.
Is that true?
Yes, sir. We're married 10 years today.
Is that true?
And Mary and I have never had a cross word.
Is that true?
Yes, and I want to buy her the most wonderful present I could find.
Is that true? You want to buy a duck?
No, I don't want to buy a duck.
Under no circumstances?
Not under any circumstances.
You nasty man!
Now, Joe, you know you don't really mean that. Why, we've been friends for years. We've always been pals. Why, you always stood up for me.
Ah, gee.
And many a time when you knew I was wrong, you took the blame.
Well, any pal would do that.
Well, Joe, do you remember that time in school, in the schoolyard, when the boy was going to hit me with a rock?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yes, and you said to the big bully, why don't you hit somebody your size? Joe, I'll never forget that.
Neither will I. I got the scar yet. Boy, I always stood up for you when you're right.
Yes, you even stood up for me when I was wrong.
Well, ever since then, your wife hasn't spoken to me.
Yes, and you know, you stood up for me when I was married, Joe, and, well, that's all forgotten. But you've got to be at the anniversary party. The wife and I were talking about you today.
Yes?
Yes, we were talking about the different people, and, well, we knew, and I spoke about the pals I had before I was married, and Mary mentioned your name.
She did?
Yes, she said, whatever became of Joe Penner and all those other bums you used to hang around with?
I don't think I'd better come up tonight.
Oh, now, don't be foolish. You know how women are, Joe.
Yeah, I know, but...
Say, I often wondered why you were never married.
Well, I guess it's because I used to be a milkman.
Well, what would that have to do with it?
Well, I guess I saw too many women early in the morning.
Joe, you're just an old cynic. But listen, Joe, if you don't come to the anniversary party, I know Mary will be sore.
You think so?
Well, yes, I'm positive. Uh-huh. Because when she suggested the party, she said to me, Tony, we'll invite your friends and my friends who've done everything they could to keep us together these 10 years. I want to give this party. It's the first chance I've ever had to get even.
I don't think I'd better come up tonight. I got to do my ironing.
Now, listen, Joe, don't disappoint me. Why, you lived with Mary and me for 5 months after we were married.
I know, but I thought maybe I'd get along better by myself.
Why?
Well, I wasn't making enough to support the three of us.
Well, Joe, things are different now. But you must come up tonight, even if you only stop in to drink our health.
Well, I don't know.
Well, maybe you don't drink anything, eh?
Oh, I take a drink now and then.
Oh, you do, eh?
Sure, I go around with a gang of two-handed drinkers. And boy, I drink right with them. And I'm the guy that sees that they all get home.
Yeah, well, what do you drink?
Buttermilk.
Well, I see that champagne will be wasted on you, Joe.
Yeah.
But listen, we're going to have the grandest lot of tasty things to eat at the party. Caviar, 4 roast Virginia hams, 3 gallons of potato salad, chicken a la king, 50 quarts of ice cream.
Boy, you must expect a lot of people.
That's what's worrying me. I'm afraid there won't be enough. I think I ought to get something else.
Is this... You want to buy a duck?
No, I don't want to buy a duck.
You next. See, man.
Joe, you mustn't get worked up like that. It's bad for you. It gives you bad dreams.
Uh-huh.
Say, do you ever dream at night, Joe?
Well, that's the time I sleep.
Well, I see. You never eat anything before you go to bed, then, do you?
No, well, maybe a little strawberry jam and some tea.
Well, that accounts for it, Joe. You see, you only dream when you eat heavily at night.
Is that so?
Yes. You know, science has proved that a heavy meal before retiring has a peculiar action on the subconscious mind and causes dreams.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, now, you see, I have a very peculiar idiosyncrasy.
Oh?
Idiosyncrasy. I mean, I have a peculiar condition that always follows when I eat late at night.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, now, if I eat a lobster just before retiring, I always have the same dream.
The same dream?
The identical dream when I eat lobster.
What do you dream?
Well, I always dream that, well, I'm in a Turkish harem surrounded by beautiful girls.
Boy, that is a peculiar in your sink, I see. But what does the Sultan say?
Oh, well, I never see him.
Oh, boy, ain't you lucky.
Sir, well, that's what eating one lobster does to me.
Well, I must be going now.
Well, wait a minute, where are you going?
Well, I'm going home and eat three lobsters and go to bed.
Rendition of this composition, Empty Days, 4 weeks ago, that it seemed to me that Jack Cracker, its very young writer, must have been influenced by stormy weather. He assures me, however, that this has been his pet tune for more than a year. However, it certainly is rather reminiscent of the tune which Ethel Waters brought into prominence.
Skies of gray would disappear. return someday. Empty days, monotony and the misery are here to stay. I can't go on without you in this hopeless way. You left me empty days. I can't go on without you in this hopeless way. You left me empty days.
With a bow in the general direction of the great Roxy, we present now a veteran member of the Roxy organization in an act which the master showman has seen fit to repeat several times in both his old theater and in the new music hall, Mr. Harold Van Doozy in Laugh, Clown, Laugh.
Over this way, over this way, ladies and gentlemen. Over this way to see Bonzo. Clown, Bonzo the clown with a broken heart. Hear him laugh, folks. Hear him laugh, for his heart is broken. Bonzo, Bonzo.
A play, and we all play a part. The lover, the dreamer, the clown. The dreamer and lover are always in tears. The clown spread sunshine around. The life with a smile is the life worthwhile. So clown, feel the curtain come down. Even though you're only make-believing, laugh, clown.
Ha-ha! Laugh!
Even though something inside is grieving, laugh, clown, laugh. Don't let your heart grow too mellow. Just be a real punchinello, fellow. You're supposed to brighten up the place and laugh, clown.
Laugh.
Take a lot of smiles around your face and laugh, clown. But don't frown, just in your vestil adjuba. Be a palliato, laugh. Is a masquerade party, and we all have our own mask to wear. The rich man pretends he is happy, the pauper pretends he don't care. But underneath all these false faces, the comedy doesn't go far. At night, when we look in our mirror, we see ourselves just as we are. But aren't we, all of us, actors? We're all of us part of the show. We appear on the scene without asking. And we leave without wanting to go. No, no, no. Really, Pagliaccio, good mama. worn out with teardrops at night when it's laid on the shelf. I may make the world think I'm married, but I can't hide the truth, pal. No matter how much it may hurt, I must keep on acting, just like Molly was your love. Love.
How can you laugh after that song? You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Boy, wasn't that sad.
Joe, I'll have to ask you to stop laughing and interrupting us this way.
Well, I have to laugh when I sing of the dream I had last night about Adam and Eve.
You dreamt about Adam and Eve?
Yeah, Eve was throwing stones at Adam, and Adam was hitting Eve over the head with a great big club. A kunk.
A kunk?
Yeah, with a big club. A boy, was he mad.
What were they fighting about? What are you laughing at now?
I gotta laugh, because I know what's coming.
All right, what were Adam and Eve fighting about?
Well, it seems that Eve put Adam's Sunday suit in the salad.
The dearest of my my souvenir. One tiny picture you hold inside brings millions of memories to me. How much I love her, you never will know. Little locket of long, long ago.
You are listening to the Fleischman's East Hour, directed by Rudy Valley, who presents Helen Hayes, Harold Van Duzy, Popson Louie, Joe Penner, and... Joe, get out of here. The next act is Pops and Louie. You're not supposed to...
Tell you about my dream I had last night?
No, and you're not going to. If I have to take you by the neck and the seeds of pants just like this...
Don't never do that again.
All right, Joe, you win. Tell us about the dream.
Well, I dreamed I went to heaven, you see, and I saw St. Peter, and I said...
You saw St. Peter?
Yes, you see, in my dreams, I meet a lot of swell people, you see. So I said to Mr. St. Peter, I says, pardon me, Mr. St. Peter, I says, do you mind if I go into heaven, please? And he says, I'll let you go into heaven on one condition. He says, you take this great thick piece of chalk and write all your sins on the golden stairs. So I'm up there writing my sins on the golden stairs, and who do you think I saw?
Who did you see?
Rudy Valley.
You saw Rudy Valley? Why, what in the world was he doing up there?
He was going back for more chalk.
You nasty man.
Small colored boys who have made a big impression at the Paramount this week in George Olson's fine stage show, Pops and Louie. I think you will find them as delightfully unique as did their New York audiences. Pops and Louie.
Nobody cares for me. ain't no St. Louis blues. I want to sing me some opera.
Opera? What do you know about opera?
What do's I know about opera? What is the St. Louis blues?
The St. Louis blues ain't no opera.
That's Harlem opera.
A study of popular songs reveals that only perhaps 2 out of 5 have melodies whose atmosphere is in keeping with the lyric. The melody of Time to Go from Shady Lady, however, is just as trustful, wistful, and sad as the thought itself. Dr. R. E. Lee, Director of Fleischman Health Research. Series of 1 minute health talks. Again to the Fleischman microphone, these two wizards of the saxophone and the piano accordion, the Hertz brothers, offering a novelty, Butterflies in the Rain. Thank you.
What, another?
Boy, I don't know when to stop, do I?
You have these dreams every night?
Oh, no, sometimes I can't go to sleep.
In that case, why don't you try counting sheep jumping over a fence?
Yeah, but who's going to get up and get dressed and go out and find a lot of sheep? Let me tell you about this little dream I had about two little cats, a little lady cat and a little gentleman cat. The little lady cat's name was Beulah, and the little gentleman's cat name was Montgomery. And it was rumored in the backyard, amongst the other alley cats, that the two were very much that way about each other. And every night at 12 o'clock, they would sit on the back fence and bill and coo, I mean, meow and mew. But one night, they had a terrible argument, so they sipped. And Beulah packed up a little bag and flit away to the Wicked City. And was never heard of again. And Montgomery, that's the gentleman's cat, realizing his mistake, he felt terrible. He had a broken heart and stuff. A little sad music, please. Oh, boy, that's bad, isn't it? And so, for 2 years after that, every night at 12 o'clock, he would sit on the back fence and cry out, Beulah? Beulah? Where I stop, Beulah? But Beulah didn't come. She was no fool. Finally, the man next door couldn't stand it any longer. Montgomery was breaking his heart, too, you know. Not now, Moisha.
Not now, Moisha.
Not now, no.
He was breaking his heart, too. So, one night, while Montgomery was yodeling, the man... Not now, Moisha.
Oh.
So, one night, while Montgomery was yodeling, the man next door snuck up on him from behind with a baseball bat. And he hit poor Montgomery over the head. A kunk. I hit Montgomery over the head. A kunk. There's no cat gonna wait that long for an a kunk. Frightening the pretty. Oh, no, that's the long one. hit Montgomery over the head. A kunk. So they took poor Montgomery away to a violin string factory, where they make violin strings out of the little cat's Well, we got rid of Montgomery. My scene now changes. Just picture yourself in a beautiful concert hall and a very eminent violinist. Now, Moisha. Very eminent violinist is about to render a selection on his violin when his G string looked over at his E string and said, Beulah, at last I found thee.
State of levees, black-eyed Creole maidens, oysters a la Rockefeller, the feet of the Mardi Gras, the home of the tempestuous kingfish Huey Long, comes this one, Louisiana Lullaby. Thank you.
lazy lane beneath the twilight sky, where the bayou moans to stop the plaintive phone of the Louisiana lullaby. I want to wander where the willow weeps and lonely crickets cry, where each weird refrain is just another strain of the Louisiana lullaby. Listening to the wistful whistling of the breeze, melodies that haunt the silent night, I'd love to tiptoe through the tangled wood and breathe a peaceful sigh, where the grass is deep, oh, let me fall asleep to the Louisiana lullaby.
In September 1897, not quite 36 years ago, at the Empire Theater in New York, Miss Maud Adams played Lady Barbara in Barry's The Little Minister for the first time. 20 years ago, in 1913, the great actress gave her last performance in the role. During those years between, all of America learned to love Lady Babbie and Maud Adams. Tonight we present as Babbie an actress entirely worthy of the great traditions of the role. Miss Helen Hayes as Lady Barbara, with John Griggs as Gavin, in Sir James M. Barry's The Little Minister.
Time, a moonlight evening in April, 1830. Place, a forest clearing near the town of Thrums in Scotland. The town of Thrums in Scotland has recently been roused from a state of dour Scotch calm by two calamities. First, an encampment of gypsies has settled on the edge of the wood, causing great excitement among the young men of the village by reason of the beauty of the gypsy womenfolk, and great concern to the young minister of the place by reason of his pastoral duties. Calamity the second, a wage riot in the weaving mills. The weavers have defied Lord Rintoul, the king's bailiff, and stoned his constable. News has reached town that the king's soldiers have been ordered to seize the riot leaders in reprisal, and some of the townsmen have stationed themselves in the woods, ready to give the alarm if the soldiers come. As the play begins, the minister, a very conscientious young man indeed, has persuaded these men to avoid bloodshed by returning to town. They stop to leave when a young girl in gypsy dress runs into the clearing, and then she calls to a straggler.
Are you a Thrums man? Quick, before the minister comes back.
My goodness, it's a little ladyship.
No, no, I'm a gypsy.
Oh, no, it won't do. You're Lord Rintoul's daughter, the Lady Barbara, dressed out in gypsy's clothes. Young ladyship, does your father know this?
Oh, dear mister, what's your name? You won't tell.
It may be my solemn duty.
When I've come to save you, to let Thrums know that the soldiers are coming tonight.
Tonight?
I heard Captain Halliwell and my father discussing it. They were so eager. I thought it would be such fun to outwit them.
What's that?
I mean, I felt so sorry for the poor weavers. And when my father thought I was in bed, I disguised myself in these things and slipped out. And oh, it's been such fun. The soldiers saw me yonder on the road, but I ran through their line.
Did you know? Then you'd better keep straight on running into the tomb.
But we can't get into town now. The soldiers are between us and it. You know, they plan to surround the town quietly before the constables march into it. Now, is there no way of alarming the people?
Why, this horn. We were to blow 3 blasts on this horn if we saw the redcoat.
Then blow, blow.
No, no, your ladyship. Not Joe Crookshanks. If I were to blow it, it would give the town a chance. But the soldiers would come back and nab me. No, no, I'm off.
Where to?
Out of this countryside and never to come back. I'm a single man and a mole catcher betrayed. And wherever there's moles to catch, that's home for me.
You coward.
But I'll keep your secret, for you've done a noble thing this night. You've saved Joe Crookshanks. Goodbye to you.
You've left the horn. Oh, the wretch. And the horn is much too great a horn for me to blow. Oh, that I were a man.
Woman.
Oh, the little minister.
Yes, the minister. Woman, stand forward. What is your name?
Babby.
Babby what?
Just Babby. I'm not married yet.
Take care. Stand up. Uncover your face.
I don't know. It's so ugly.
What difference, think you, does that make to a minister? Uncover your face.
There.
Why?
I'm glad you like it.
Why, I never said I...
But what difference does that make to a minister?
I have sworn to drive you gypsies from these parts. Be gone to your associates and tell them that from me.
I wish I could, but I've lost them. I've been telling fortunes. Tell your fortune, pretty gentleman.
No!
Oh, he's angry again. Oh.
Oh, come, come. You're an odd girl. Don't cry.
Oh, when you speak to me so kindly, I could near kiss you.
What? What did you say?
I said, oh, if I could only blow on the horn.
What horn?
This horn. I so often lose my way that they gave me this to blow on so that could hear it and come for me. But I cannot blow it.
Do you think your friends are in the wood?
I can. My father is in the wood. And my sweetheart.
Well, then I shall blow it for you.
But could you?
Could I? Why do you ask me that?
Because you're so little.
Could I? Give me the horn. There.
It was grandly done.
I wonder if they heard.
I wonder. I didn't suppose you could blow louder. It needs a strong man to blow a lusty blast.
I am a strong man. They must have heard that.
Again.
That must suffice.
I see you're tired.
Tired? A town drum. At this hour? Well, that's very odd. I can't understand it. Look, the lights in the town. The people are shouting. What can it mean?
It means that the town is rising again, the soldiers.
Soldiers? There are no soldiers.
The wood is full of them. You hear?
My poor people.
There's a chance for them yet. The alarm has been sounded.
What? After I forbade it? Who sounded the alarm?
You did.
I?
On the horn.
Why, you gypsy.
The soldiers. They must not find me. I was seen when I came through the line. Your cloak. Quickly, give it to me. Hurry.
I'll not help you. I'll not at all.
Oh, are you a man or what are you? They'll arrest me. Put me in jail. Would you see me in jail? Well,
run, then. I'll not tell them I saw you.
Oh, there's no time to run. Give me that cloak. Must I tear it off for you?
Well, here, then, here. But I'll not. I'll not.
Hurry! Oh! You, Mr. Dishart?
Introduce me, dear.
Why?
Ah, Sergeant, you may chide me for venturing here, but where should a woman be on such a night save by her husband's side?
Mrs. Dishart, my service to you, ma'am.
Sergeant, I must inform
you. Yes, yes, love. About the woman in gypsy dress.
You saw her? Which way?
She came stealing out here and then ran back that way.
She's doubled. After her! I must follow them. You and your good lady will excuse me, sir.
Sergeant!
Have you anything to say, sir?
Have you?
No.
And good night, Mr. Dishart. Your servant, sir.
You said you were my wife.
How dreadful. Oh, why did I not say I was his mother? Oh, forgive me. You've saved me after the way I... Oh, how generous you are.
No, no. I had nothing to do with it. And the way you talk. But a few moments ago, you were a gypsy girl in impertinent clothing. You spoke as broadly as any woman in my congregation. And now a cloak suddenly converts you into a fine lady. Who are you?
Perhaps it is the cloak that has bewitched me. I'll take it off. There. Oh, Lush, it was just the cloak that did it. Oh, certainly, what a difference a bonnet cloak makes to a woman.
There are no soldiers in this part of the wood now. Your way is open. Go. You may wear the clothes.
Won't you say goodbye?
Go!
Don't you like me?
Can a man like a woman against his will?
Of course he can. That's the nicest way of being liked.
For that gypsy, your sweetheart, I don't like him.
Poor gypsy.
Are you to be married to him?
Unless I find someone I like better.
Well, how dare you tell me that?
You ask. Well, I think I'd better go. Goodbye.
You should never have come.
Oh, I will go. And unless you call me back and apologize, I'll not bring the cloak back and I'll not see you again, ever. Did you call?
No.
Yes, you did. I heard you.
Babby.
Yes.
You are everything a woman ought not to be.
Am I, indeed?
You are. As a minister, I despise you for your want of conscience. For you are no respecter of the proprieties. That humility in the presence of your superiors, which so well becomes a maiden, is totally and lamentably lacking in you. Everything about you is wrong. Your very nose infuriates me.
Would you like to tweak it?
Child, have you no...
No. Isn't it fun?
Fun? If Lord Rintoul's soldiers catch you, it won't be fun. Well, are you never serious?
Sometimes.
When?
Well, when I think of the future. I have read my future, Mr. Dishart, and it is not a happy one. I'm afraid poor Babby is to get her just desserts. I see my future husband.
But you don't care for him. Well, then why?
To please my father.
A gypsy is not the right man for you.
The right man for me. I see him.
Go on. Go on.
He is everything I am not, and nothing that I am. He must be strong, a man, no idler, one who takes the world by the throat.
All ministers do.
A man who has a mind of his own, and having once made it up, stands to it in defiance of everyone.
Of his congregation.
If I love him, it must be because he has shown me what love is. He must understand me as I am. He must pity me for what is ignoble in me, and love me only for what is good. Or yield to my coaxings or wiles or tempers. I must be subservient to him. He must rule me. He must be my master.
Your lord and master. Babby. Babby, I have never kissed a woman before.
Before what?
Before? No.
Mr. Dishart. Are you certain sure you never kissed a lassie before?
Never. Never, Babby.
Washman, how quick you are to learn.
Makers of Fleischmann's yeast are very glad to make the following announcement at the request of the National Recovery Administration. On next Monday morning, an army of 1,500,000 volunteer workers in the Blue Eagle campaign will begin the task of making a house-to-house canvass throughout the United States. These men and women will work without pay and will be donating their time and efforts as patriotic Americans fighting a battle for the unemployed. They will be identified by an insignia button bearing the word volunteer. We know that all Americans will be happy to afford them every courtesy and cooperation in their great undertaking for this cause in which all of us are so vitally interested. Their job will be to get every employer in America on the dotted line for the Blue Eagle and a consumer's insignia in every home. Cooperation on your part will help Uncle Sam mightily in this great drive to put men and women back on the payroll. The motto of the Blue Eagle is, we do our part. May we ask each of you to translate this motto into real accomplishment by giving your utmost cooperation to the members of the Army of Volunteer Workers who will visit your places of business and your houses next week.
Thank you, Jimmy. This is Rudy Valley. We should tell you that we'll be with you next Thursday as usual. I hope our program will contain another impressive cast. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.